Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 15. Emmeline had always liked Bess's house. It was sweetly middle class, with good pieces that didn't concern themselves with being stylish or the latest look. Enough space for a family, but only just. Emmeline had never lived in a house like this one. The daughter of a shopkeeper and the wife of a wealthy man, she'd only known extremes. Well, perhaps that was overstating the case. She hadn't grown up in a shack, after all. No. Emmeline's house on Cottonwood Street back in Emporia had been small, but sturdily built. Not a place you'd necessarily want to bring friends home to. At least not your fashionable friends, but one with a roof that kept out the snow and the rain. Growing up, Emmeline had never imagined she would one day live in a beautifully appointed Queen Anne Victorian, complete with turrets and elaborate spindlework, a wraparound porch embracing its lower level and a smaller porch gracing the second story. She could never have anticipated a house filled with the finest rugs, the most fashionable furnishings, the latest in bedding and beds, the most charming of children's rooms. The scope of her imagination had not been grand enough to anticipate all the riches that life had in store for her. But Bess's house, her sweetly middle-class home, was very nice in its own way, Emmeline thought as she looked around the living room, and so like Bess. Elegant yet comfortable, warm without being overbearingly cozy. No, the only off-putting and overbearing thing about Bess's house was its newest resident, who at this very moment was opining about whether or not quilts should be considered art. "These new appliqué quilts do strike one as artworks of a sort," Edwina said from the club chair next to the fireplace, which was clearly her chair these days, her sweater draped over the back, her sewing basket firmly planted beside it. "But can art ever truly be made from a pattern?" "I just read an article about artists copying from each other in one of Mother Eula's old copies of The Farmer's Wife," Elise said, her hands resting on her alarmingly large belly. She turned to Emmeline and beamed. "There are so many fascinating articles in The Farmer's Wife, Mrs. Grangerfield. Why, I've learned about foreign countries and politics and all sorts of things." Emmeline smiled at the girl. "Tell us what you learned about art and patterns, dear." "Just that some of the best artists in history learned by copying. Michelangelo, for example. What's funny is that his copies were a million times better than the originals." "Yes, of course. Most of learning begins with imitation," Edwina said in an annoyingly agreeable tone. "That's why I don't object to the quilting kits that Florence and others of her ilk sell. The new quilter can be overwhelmed when learning the craft. There are so many steps, after all, the cutting and stitching, the pressing, the piecing of blocks. Not to mention the proper selection of fabrics, which is an art unto itself. How many quilts are ruined, absolutely ruined, by poor color choices, I ask you, especially now when there are ever so many fabrics available? In my day, you were lucky to get a new length of calico once a year. Most of our quilts were made from sewing scraps." Emmeline picked up her coffee cup and held it to her lips, pausing before she took a sip. What you've neglected to consider about applique patterns, and I believe you began by pontificating about patterns, yes? Is that so many quilters use the pattern as a starting place, a suggestion, as it were. They make a pattern their own in so many ways, whether it's through an interesting choice of colors, some added embroidery, a deviation from the original design. That, to me, speaks of an artist making choices, not a drudge simply doing as she's told. Perhaps, Edwina agreed, again sounding oh so amiable. But Emmeline could tell that underneath that facade of friendliness was a puritanical Sunday school teacher bent on imparting the wisdom of the ages. Yes, that was Edwina Baldwin in a nutshell, Milton Falls' own Cotton Mather. Did you ever wonder who created the quilt blocks we use? Dorothy said, and Emmeline couldn't tell if this was a genuine observation or if Dorothy was trying to veer the conversation onto another path. Was it one woman who designed a drunkard's path, or were quilters all over the country working it out at the same time? It's such a useful construction, that quarter circle and the little arch that curves around it. Why, there's no end of patterns you can make with that. Now that's an interesting point, Eula said, nodding. It gets back to what we were saying about art and originality. You take something like the Drunkard's Path block. You can do so many different things with it, especially once you start playing with colors. That reminds me, Dorothy, my marigolds are starting to come up. Well, mine are too, Dorothy exclaimed. She looked around the circle. Eula and I are going to collect the flowers and make dyes for fabric. We're going back to our country roots. Bess glanced up from the double wedding ring block she was working on. How will either of you have the time? You're both so busy these days. And, as was so often the case lately, the conversation turned to the latest news from Building Number 5. Emmeline tried to pay attention so she could save up tidbits for Florence, who was in Cincinnati on business, but her mind kept going back to the overbearing Edwina. She'd set herself the task of ridding the bee of this overly opinionated, divisive woman, but how to do it? That was the rub right there. It was hard to imagine she could convince Bess to kick the old biddy out to the curb, especially since Edwina was bearing some of Bess's financial burden. Besides, Bess seemed genuinely fond of her. One thing was for certain, Emmeline thought. The sooner Bess married Joe, the sooner Bess and Edwina would part. Emmeline wasn't exactly sure how the scene would play out. Would Bess and Joe move into the rectory while Edwina continued to reside in the house? Where would Helen go? Perhaps she could stay with Edwina and let the honeymooners have a bit of privacy across town. Jane would be off to college in the fall, so her needs really didn't need to be considered. But what then? Say that Bess and Joe moved into the rectory and Edwina lived out the rest of her days here. Would that stop her from being a part of the bee? Probably not. But what if Edwina were to marry again? Emmeline sat up straighter, intrigued by this notion. Yes, Edwina was on the old side for marriage, but it wasn't entirely unheard of that a woman of her advanced years might remarry if she met a suitable mate. Emmeline quickly went through the roster of all the unmarried men she knew over the age of 70. There weren't many, true enough. In fact, she could only think of two. Eli Wolfe, a member of Father Grangerfield's old social set, who was in his late 70s and had already outlived two wives. And Bonaparte Bellows, one of Milton Falls' most notable confirmed bachelors, and a very popular member of the First Presbyterian congregation. Oh, Beau was so much fun at coffee hour, always eager to gossip about the latest local scandals. A man like him might very well find himself desiring a woman's companionship in his sunset years, Emmeline thought with a nod of her head. And he had a lovely little cottage over on Orange Street. A little run down, perhaps, but charming all the same, and not so small that it couldn't accommodate one more resident. Why, Edwina would simply love it there. She and Beau would have fascinating, if long-winded, conversations about everything under the sun. Yes, the more she considered it, the more Emmeline believed that Bonaparte Fellows and Edwina were made for each other. It occurred to Emmeline that Beau Fellows' house might look a little worse for the wear because he didn't have the funds to make repairs. He'd been living on family money for years. The Fellows' fortune had been made by selling off huge tracts of land in the 19th century and then investing the profits in the stock market. Perhaps those investments had been wiped out in the crash. Come to think of it, when was the last time Beau had arrived at church in a new suit? He'd always been a bit of a peacock, but like his house, his wardrobe had become somewhat shabby around the edges over the last few years. So Bonaparte Fellows might be a man in need of funding, and Edwina Baldwin was a woman of means, even if those means had been somewhat reduced by the recent economic downturn. Like Emmeline in Florence, Edwina had been one of the lucky ones. A good deal of her husband's money had been tied up in grocery stores. Kroger, Emmeline believed. Concerns which had weathered the crash better than most. Edwina's booming voice interrupted Emmeline's thoughts. What's your latest column going to be about, Emmeline? Are you allowed to tell us, or is it a highly guarded secret? Emmeline smiled at the old woman. Now that she'd figured out how to get rid of her, she felt the smallest soupçon of affection for her. Not at all, darling. I'm working on a column about a new block I've just designed. I call it Bonaparte's Retreat. Like the song? Elise exclaimed. My father plays that on his fiddle. Yes, that's exactly it, Emmeline agreed, though she'd never heard of a song called Bonaparte's Retreat. Still, she liked the idea that her imaginary, yet to be created, block was inspired by a song. Yes, she told Elise, that was a favorite tune from my girlhood back in Emporia. The block is an updated version of the old log cabin block. I saw the loveliest picture in a book the other day. A happy couple in their golden years, sitting on the front porch of a quaint old cabin, and I immediately wondered how I could, well, translate it. That sounds lovely, Edwina replied. I look forward to seeing it. I look forward to showing it to you, Emmeline replied, her mind already at work on the design and on her scheme to rid the bee of Edwina Baldwin once and for all. I've always loved having luncheon here, Bonaparte Fellows confided to Emmeline on Friday. Bonaparte at the Beaumont Inn. It has a nice ring to it, don't you think? Oh, I do, Emmeline agreed. I certainly do. I remember the first time I came here. It was with Thomas's mother, a month before the wedding. I was as nervous as could be. Charlotte Grangerfield would have scared the white socks off a black cat, Bonaparte exclaimed. The most formidable woman I've ever met. Poor pet, it must have been terrifying. Oh, it was. I felt like she was making note of my every move. My fingers shook every time I picked up a fork. I knew all about which fork to use when, my dear aunt had trained me for such an occasion, But with Mother Grangerfield across the table from me, every etiquette rule I'd ever learned simply vanished in a puff of smoke. Bonaparte reached across the table to pat Emmeline's hand. You must have passed the test, or we wouldn't be here now. Of course, I can't imagine that Charlotte could have resisted you, even if you poured your soup into your handbag. Au contraire, Mother Grangerfield could have resisted the Queen of France. Still, I do think she approved of me. It helped that she simply couldn't abide my sister-in-law, Mabel.
Harry's wife, yes?
Bonaparte lit a cigarette and blew out a plume of smoke. A bit rough-edged, that one. But with a heart of gold, Emmeline countered. Really, she's the dearest girl. Very hearty. Bonaparte grinned.
Yes, hale and hearty. Rather like an ox.
Oh, you're terrible, Beau, Emmeline twittered, though not wrong. The two of them smiled at each other across the table. Is this the first time we've ever been out to lunch together? Emmeline asked. If so, we've waited much too long.
Our coffee hour chats have offered their fair share of sustenance, Beau said. But I agree, we've too long delayed this delight. I suppose as one gets older, one thinks most about preserving one's strength. I used to dash all over town from dawn to dusk, but no longer, I fear. My old bones creak and complain if I put them to too much use.
I would have liked to have known you in your younger days, Emmeline said. Tell me, how many ladies did you squire hither and yon? Your list of dance partners must have been a mile long.
Oh, it was, my dear, it was, Beau concurred. I don't think there was a party or a dance, of the right sort, mind you, that I missed.
And still, your affections never alighted on one special mademoiselle? Beau didn't answer immediately. Instead, he looked toward the window, his expression wistful. When he turned back to Emmeline, he said,
There was indeed, though she wasn't a Milton Falls girl.
No, when I was a young man, I traveled to St. Louis to visit my cousins there. This was in the early 80s, perhaps 1882 or 83. I was young and handsome, full of vim and vigor, and rich, I might add. Oh, those were the days. One night, I attended a cotillion on Millionaire's Row. Oh, my dear, the ladies were so charming. And the dresses. I'll never understand why they went out of fashion. Those full, shimmering skirts, the bustles and clinging bodices. It was like being handed a candy box. How could one choose from all of those delights? But when Rose, my dearest, most darling Rose, floated into my path, I knew she was the one. I knew it before I even knew her name. Emmeline studied Bonaparte's face. His eyes were closed, and he spoke as though he were lost in a reverie. It felt a bit like a performance, as though he'd recited these lines so many times he no longer needed a script. Yet the words felt scripted all the same. I suppose it was love at first sight, then, she queried, and Beau, eyes still closed, nodded.
Oh, yes. But the stars never align for us, I fear.
Opening his eyes, Bonaparte leaned back in his seat and sighed.
She was visiting from Atlanta with her mother, you see. Or perhaps a better way to put it was that she and her mother had made a brief escape from Atlanta, which was still recovering from the war. On the upswing, yes, but still shaky. Rose had lived through the burning of that city, and she was fragile in its aftermath.
She had to have been a child during the Civil War, Emmeline said. Too young to remember, yes? Bonaparte seemed to awaken from his dreamlike state. He raised an eyebrow and gave a slight scowl.
Tragedy imprints itself in so many different ways, my dear. Rose's poor mother never recovered from losing everything in the war. She'd been a belle, you see, and the war had ruined her life. And thus, it ruined everything for my dear Rose as well. Emmeline had to stop herself from saying, "Good, I'm glad." She'd crossed paths with Southerners from time to time and had no use for their romantic notions. The waitress delivered bowls of soup to their table, and Bonaparte waited for her to withdraw before he continued. "Long story short, my dear, my Rose and I fell in love that very night. But as fate would have it, she and her mother were called back to Atlanta 2 days later. Rose's father had fallen ill and needed them at home. I considered accompanying the pair, but the very day they were leaving, I received a note from my own mother calling me back to Milton Falls. She had missed me more than she had ever anticipated and needed me to return immediately." How convenient, Emmeline thought, but kept this observation to herself. "How unfortunate, dear Beau. I assume that you and Rose wrote to one another." "Oh, yes," Beau exclaimed eagerly. "We wrote daily missives and shared the most minute details of our lives. We carried on our love affair via the mail for nearly a year. And then one day I received the most terrible letter." He paused and waved a hand over his eyes as though brushing back tears. "My darling Rose had died from malaria and was no more. I would never see her again. And I would never love again. I knew it the minute I finished reading the letter. And such has been my fate." "How terrible for you," Emmeline said, even though something about this story, many things actually, didn't ring exactly true. While she believed in love at first sight, or attraction at first sight in any event, she also knew that out of sight, out of mind tended to be more the case with young people. Bonaparte Fellows had been a very eligible bachelor in Milton Falls before he was a confirmed bachelor. Surely, other young ladies vying for his attention would have eventually pushed old Rosie Bell to the shadowy side of the street and finally into full oblivion. Of course, some people loved drama and were practically addicted to romance. Perhaps Beau was one of them. In fact, Emmeline was fairly sure of it. How to use this to her advantage was the thing. "Beau, you must have been so lonely over the years," she commiserated, "and especially now, given that you find yourself more confined to your home." Beau nodded. "It is the one drawback to living a long life, I'm sorry to report. One watches one's friends wither and fall from the vine until there are very few left who remember the old days of bodices and bustles and lively cotillions. And of course, when one has limited means, the old entertainments are no longer affordable." Which was to say, Emmeline thought, this lunch would be charged to the Grangerfield account. No matter, if she got what she wanted, it would be well worth the cost. "You know, Beau," Emmeline said, as though this thought had just this second occurred to her, "I have a new friend who has quickly become a dear friend. She's quite a bit older than I am, but still awfully attractive and so very charming. Perhaps you know her. Edwina Baldwin?" Beau gave Emmeline an appraising look. "I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Baldwin, but I know of her. I believe her husband passed away a few years ago." "Yes, that's right," Emmeline said. "A terrible loss. Fortunately, he left her a sizable." "Well, it's awfully tacky to discuss money, isn't it? Let us say that Edwina has more than enough to get her through these final years. Much more than enough. But like you, she has so few friends her own age, and I think at times she feels adrift as a result. She chatters on about how young people keep you young and all that. But I can tell she's a touch lonely, in spite of her many social engagements." "Is that so?" Beau said, nodding, and Emmeline could tell he understood exactly what she was saying. "Now, correct me if I'm wrong," she continued, "but you've always loved the Bard, yes? because Edwina is an aficionado herself, and I just so happen to have 2 tickets to Hamlet, which is playing at the Southern Theater in Columbus next month. I thought it might be nice if you and Mrs. Baldwin attended a Sunday matinee together. My driver will transport you there and back. If you're interested, I'll make the proposal to Edwina. I'm sure she'll accept, and then the 2 of you can become fast friends. I think that sounds delightful, my dear, Bonaparte said as he tipped his bowl toward himself to get the last drops of his cauliflower soup. I can't think of anything I'd enjoy more. Emmeline smiled. Of course he couldn't. Bonaparte Fellows knew his ship was coming in. With any luck, he and Edwina would sail away into the sunset. Far, far away. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow. A production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.